is an interview with my friends to go to Youngstown State University on the racial tensions in Farrell, Pennsylvania during the 1950s by Ronald Rice at 301 Hamilton, June 1951 at 01 in the afternoon. Okay, Mr. Williams, can we begin by from originally? What do you remember most about your childhood?
It wasn't. It wasn't the worst, and it wasn't the best, because my mother, she worked, and my father, he worked, and we had rather nice people that they worked for. They helped out a lot during the first days. I can't remember that. And for a little bit, I did go to school. I went to old black school again. It wasn't animated. And,
that would have been 1940s.
Yeah. Late 30s and early 40s. Because I think I quit in 45 on account of the war was on, and a kid could get a job anywhere then. And my home is all, it's a naval base, my home. And a kid could get a job anywhere. And I remember, I never will forget, my first job was water boy. All the fellas that I worked with was over draft age. And I was a water boy, and they would, in other words, they would come around and BS around the water tank on my back to kill the time when it was goofing off. But then it was quite a bit of farming there, but I never farmed. A lot of people, you know, they are under the impression that if you're black and you come from the South, that you're a farmer. But it's not true. And
did you have a large family?
Oh, it was five of us.
Five children?
Five, yeah. Three girls and two boys.
And you were the oldest?
Right.
Let's go, and you got a job during the war. You were too young to be drafted.
I was too young to be drafted, and right at the mellow age for working, for as they was concerned, you know. I mean, well, not for as they were concerned, you know, they didn't make it with school or nothing like that, or know what force you. I never forget, I had an uncle, he was in service, he was stationed in Australia, and he wrote back and told my mother that, make sure you keep that boy in school. Evidently, he was going through hard times, you know, with his education. And, but I quit anyway.
What grade were you in?
I think I was in the eighth or the ninth. That's why I put the eighth or the ninth. And I started working like construction, and then I worked in a grocery store. Then I went back into construction. I think I was about 15, 16 years old, maybe. And then I went to Washington, D.C., which is 48 miles from my home. And I worked construction there all summer. And then I started my one job finished up. In other words, you right. Build a big high rise a year, and then they'll start another job, or else the winter. They'll get it closed in for so they can work through the winter, but they would lay most of the labors off unless you were skilled like an electrician or plumber. You would work all year round, but I wasn't. So I think it was around August. Yeah, it was August. And my uncle, he'd been here since back in the early 20s, working in the mills. And he was visiting, and I asked him, my brothers, say that he was coming back with me, but my brother, he told me he was too young, because I think he was around 16 years old. Well, anyway, that's said, well, I'll go in this place. It's like, and he said, well, be ready Saturday night. That's when I'm leaving.
To come up north of?
Yeah, to come back to Pennsylvania. It's only 368 miles from here. And so that Saturday night, I think we struck it out. That was when before they had the turnpike all the way up. And it wasn't no interstates.
That would have been what year would that have been?
48. Like we rode all night. I was so tired. That's why I've been working the mill ever since.
You got up here in 1948. And where'd you go when you got up here?
I went to Chidango and Coffee to work in the mill until January of 51. And I went in there during the Korean conflict. I spent 2 years in there.
Did you get drafted? Were you drafted?
Yeah. And QS then that I got drafted from Sharon, and they sent me right back within 90 miles of my home for basic training, and sent me within 15 miles of my home for advanced training in tank. I was in a tank outfit. I messed with tanks and all that stuff, but I wound up cooking.
You were in the Army then?
Right.
And how long were you in service?
2 years.
And then you got out of service, you come back to the Shining Valley?
Yeah. Came back and went right back in the mill. And then I went to a trade school in Newcastle for off and on for about 4 years. To learn bricklaying trade. And I would go to school there in the winter, and in the summer I was working with a guy by the name of Fred Tibbs. I think I learned off that guy more than I ever thought I would learn off anyone.
Practical experience.
Right, practical experience. Well, I was more or less trying to pick up an extra buck, you know, by going to school, because they would give you, I forgot what it was, but they would give you so much money. But out of that money, you would have to pay the school. Where the World War II vets, they could, they was going to school, and they would, and the government would take care of their schooling. But when I come along, the amount that I got, I would have to pay my schooling out of it. But that extra $50, $60 every month, I was after that. And plus, I was really trying to learn, because I was determined to get out the mill. And then as things went on, it got better. The conditions got better in the mill, and all that. And I'm still there. I'll be there 9 more years, I hope, if Reagan don't cut the Social Security.
Where is Shenango?
Sharpsville, Pennsylvania.
Sharpsville, Pennsylvania.
Right. Yeah, the headquarters in Pittsburgh.
But it's a pretty big plant.
They employ about 350, yeah, with full force. Right now, unfortunately, they hire. But they have two big plants in Pittsburgh. But over since 63, I really had it rough, you know, working in the mill, because they had this plant in Pittsburgh. They would, where was most orders, that's where they would keep which plant they would keep going. And if Sharon Steel was going bad year, well, all just a handful of people would be working up, and I was always was one of the young ones. Now I'm one of the top ones. I have 33 years now. And I always survive somehow. I don't know.
Going back to the service, did you go overseas?
No.
You stayed in the States?
Yeah, I stayed in the States the whole time. I had a lot of training, good training, but when they did try to send me overseas or thinking about it, whatever, my time was limited then, so it would cost taxpayers too much money then. I guess send me over there and come back, because they didn't keep you over 2 years at the time.
Where you work now at Shenango, did they ever give you any special training for what you do there now?
No. I was one of I'm a post mill operator. That's a horizontal type 4 and type of mill. think when he put that thing in, it cost about $250,000. Now it cost over $1 million to put it in. And I was a hook on or whatever you want to call it. Well, out there we call it chamber, but anyway, I was a chamber and I helped unload it off the railroad car when they brought it in. When the guy stuck the pick in the ground and dig the hole for the foundation, I was right there. And when they cranked it up, it started running. I was right there. And I'm always real, people always say that I was nosy as hell. And I was always looking over someone's shoulder. And I think I watched that machine for about a year, watched the operator. And the two original guys, they sent them to Youngstown to another plant over there, had one similar to it, but it wasn't doing the type of work we was doing. And they was operators, and I was a chairman. And I looked over their shoulder, I was watching all their movements and everything they'd done for 1 year. And then they had this one guy on it, he got off, he bid it off, and the job went up a bit, and I bid it on it. And I've been there ever since 59. They put the machine in 58. I've been on it since 59. Yeah. I started out chipping, which is pretty rough. But this is all push button stuff. I mean, you have to watch it. There's no manual. No, not too much heavy work, but I work on it with incentive. More you produce, the more money you make. Try to get along with everybody. And I think I went on in 59 and 61. They sent me to Pittsburgh to break in a bunch of guys down there. In 1969, they sent me to Buffalo, New York to the other plant. They put the same type of machine in. A little modern. Every time they do something, just like a car, it's updated a little bit. But it all works on the same principle. And in 69, I went up there. I was up there, I think, for 3 weeks. Pittsburgh, I was down a little better than a month.
Good. Well, what are some of your chief interests besides what?
Well, yeah, I don't know, I was always interested, from the day I got married, I was always trying to struggle to do better than I did. And I think that's the name of the game, and that's what every other family in this country today. But in recent years, things really didn't materialize. I tried to educate my first daughter, Stephanie, there. And, she borrowed money. She got the money. But she went a little while and she dropped out. Now she worked for the federal government. But it was just a waste of money because the job that she got now, it was more or less, she was going to, professional secretary or whatever it was then, Pittsburgh. She borrowed this money to go to school, and then she went, I think she started around August and went until about November, and all that money that she had paid the people just went down the drain. Then she left and she went to California. She didn't like California. She come back here, stayed around here a little while, and she went to Washington, D.C. She floated around there for about 6 months or better, and through some of my associates through church that I know, he worked for the work rent on the right on Capitol Hill. That's what they call it. Because he was the aides of a guy from your state, Hayes. You remember he had the clothes.
Yeah.
But he was associated with his. And I talked to him, asked him, his name was Reverend Chapman. I asked him for the chance to help him get my daughter in. That's how she got in. Shows you should know someone, a state club, in good with someone all the time. And my second daughter, I guess I went through hell with her. She had a baby when she was real young. And boy that she was going with, I had a lot of trouble with him. Matter of fact, I wound up in the hospital for a week behind. They have a little baby. Now she, since then he's in prison. I more or less help take care of the baby. She comes here anytime. Matter of fact, she stayed here last night. And she goes and comes as she please. I treat her just like I would one of mine. And he haven't done that before. That's the name of the game, you know, today.
Well, we could jump back to the 1960s here. What was an average day like for you living here? Did you live in Farrell at the time?
60.
In the early 60s?
Yeah.
What was an average day for you, like, in the early 60s?
I was, let me see, 60s. I was working part-time. I was working in the mill. And, like I would go out and work with this guy I mentioned, work for someone else, do little odd jobs, like lay a few blocks, build a garage, block garage or something for someone, pour a little concrete here and there.
In addition to working?
In addition to working in the mill.
Did you live on him?
No, I live right next block, 305 Fruit. And I got burnt out there. In the wintertime, you can see the house from here, because I got burnt out there in 70. I think it was around this time of year.
And the house burned down.
Uh-huh. And I was out working part-time there. And instead of fixing the house up, I sold it as it was and took the money that I got out of that one and put it into this one. And that's how I really got there. But I wasn't involved in... I wasn't heavy. I always did belong to a church, but I, you know, wasn't heavy into it. And I'm really not heavy into it now. But I hold a, I'm a trustee, and I pay his ticket, all the bills and things.
Which church?
Right.
What church is that?
Bethlehem Baptist. I take care of all the bills, which is a headache. And at the time, I was involved in the Elks. Went to the Elks. I was, matter of fact, the night that the first riot broke out in Farrell, I was sitting in the bar in there. You know, and a few kids, they come in and they would say this, and we gonna do this, and we gonna do that. But I didn't, you know, I really didn't believe it. I said, this can't be happening to a little town, you know. But, some of the stuff they done, I was for it, and some of it, you know, didn't really make too much sense.
Yeah. Can you recall the first time you heard about some of the black minority leaders, such as Dr. Martin Luther King?
Can I recall?
What do you recall about him, remembering about him in the early 60s?
I think he was a great man. I really do.
How did you hear about him? Through the radio?
Through the radio, TV, and then I buy his jet magazine. I know you hit up a Jet magazine. I buy that every week and I always read about it. And I think I was, no, I didn't make it. My brother went down when they had the march on Washington. I don't know if you remember it, but you probably heard about it.
Yeah, I read about it.
And I think it was the best thing that ever could happen to a black person. I really do. But there's so many people that have come along since him that everything that he stood for, they done took it and twisted around and misused it. Because I really don't think that man meant to hurt no one. Right. I really don't.
Can you recall anything about the rioting in other American cities in the 60s? Do you remember hearing about like Detroit or?
Yeah, Washington D.C. especially, because she's a distant cousin to, well, she was a cousin, I should put it, so she was a cousin to me, and she was rather, because she was my daddy's cousin, and she was rather, and she lived at 14th and U. I always will remember that place. She had her own property, mind her own business, didn't get involved in nothing. She they'd take a little drink of tea every now and then. And they burnt her completely out. I mean, everything. You know, and I, and my father, he asked me one time I was down there, which I'm not, I don't consider myself an educated person, but I'm more up to date than he was. And he said, well, I really don't think it made sense. I said, well, I don't know. But Washington, D.C., all the areas that, when I left Virginia, like I started, I didn't tell you before, when I left Virginia, that's where I went to. Well, I did tell you, right. I worked in Washington. And all the areas that I went in, it was all black neighborhoods. They had everything. Everything that, like, I would say that the people in Furrow worship, they had to go to the white man to get. You didn't have to go to them. I don't know who, where these people got theirs from. They had their own theaters, they had their own shows, their own businesses and everything, even construction firms, there, right there in Washington, D.C. And I was always up in that area around U Street, and it was called different guys that, you know, black folks, they're good for nicknaming someone. Yeah. Even I had one. And they had everything going for them. As a matter of fact, I had an uncle. I got an uncle. He died in May of 79. Right now, I'm waiting on some money from him, where he left me in his will. Yeah. And some of the things up there, and I go to Washington, when I was living in Washington, I could walk from southwest of Washington to northwest of Washington, from the ghettos of southwest in Washington to the ghettos in northwest of Washington. Wouldn't worry about no one putting their hand on me. But now, when I go there, I'm scared to go around the block walking by myself, unless I got my pistol in my pocket. Well, and I strongly believe in that when, like, this place is right here in Furrow, that I'm a little skeptical about going, and I know this place is in Furrow where you're skeptical about going. And this place is in Washington, D.C. that I know you wouldn't think about going in there. And I know I'm not going in there because it's real hell there in those big cities. And I tell my uncle about it, which he's 77 years old. He's like my second father. I tell him all the time. I say, Uncle Clayton, I say, I'm so glad I didn't get tied up in Washington, you know, because I probably would. I don't know what I might have wound up, you know, because at the time I was young and dumb and drank a little bit, but I never used dope. Don't intend to, but. But in the areas that I was in, that's the name of the game there.
A lot of problems. How did you receive most of your information about rioting, racial unrest in other cities? Was it mostly television, radio?
Through the media.
Well, during the 1960s, could you sense any, living here in Farrell, could you sense any growing racial tensions in Farrell?
Not really. You know, like I would say 75% of the people that I worked with was white. And I didn't see any difference. And you know, because I guess because the people knew me and knew what I stood for and all that, but the whole issue in Furrow, I would say, was more or less copycat. You know, they see, well, they're doing it in the big city, we could do it in the little city, you know, and get away with it. But it's just like in big city, well, copycat, they hurt themselves in some ways in big cities. And right here in Furrow, I know they hurt themselves. Well, I know different people that are stores here in Furrow where they depend on these people. So I could name a few stores that people, my people, they bought clothes from, get them on credit, go there and tell the man, well, give me this, or give me that, or get a box of bag of groceries. And you pay them when they come back. But I didn't do it. I remember when I first came here that I was certain people down in Sharon that I would go to and buy stuff on credit, but like clothes and groceries, it didn't make too much sense to me, because I always believe it, you know, before you take your money and or pay it, before you take your money and go out in the street and have a good time, like I know a lot of people do, is get your groceries and need pair of shoes, you go buy the pair of shoes, pay cash for them, and then you don't have to worry about it, because before you get them paid for, they might be worn, and before you get the groceries paid for, you somebody in the need of help.
Well, you answered my next question here. A lot of people feel that racial violence and stuff that happened in Ferrell was a result of what happened in other cities, sort of like a domino effect.
Right.
You pretty much agree with that?
Right, yeah.
Well, was your life or any of your family's lives ever affected by any racial tension or violence here in the city?
No.
Us, maybe at work or at school, or do you recall any specifics?
I never had any problem. I know people, you know, people like to use that old excuse, well, they discriminate against me. You know, that's the famous word amongst my people, amongst black people, that they discriminate against me. Well, everything that I went after, if I went in the proper way, I got it. And my job in the mill right now, I'm satisfied. I could have been a foreman right now if I had went after it, but I didn't want it. Or didn't want it that hard, or else I was, I don't know how these other guys that went around me got them, but a lot of guys say they're stool pigeons, or they'll eat more shit than I will, but I never, everything that I went in, like I bid on this job, I never forget it. I have an uncle who was born and raised right here in what they call so-called North, and I don't believe it's any different than North and the South. But when I bid on this job, I put David B. Williams on it. And he said, man, they don't want no niggas on that job. I said, how you know this, Puig? That's his name, Puig. I said, well, he said, well, you get on that, they're going to mess you up. I said, well, they're going to mess me up, I'm going to put my name on it. I never had a minute's problem. Day I put my name on that job. And I never wanted too much. All I want is just a decent living, mind my own business, and go my way.
Do you know if any of your friends were ever directly affected by any tension or violence, racial tension or violence?
No. I know of people that cause problems of You know, a lot of people, they go out and look for problems. I know, not in my relation, but I know people that they found it. They went and looked for it, and they found it.
What can you recall about some of the burning and damage that was done to some of the businesses in Ferrell, like Pick Electric, Hamilton Drugs, and such? What can you recall about that?
Not really, no. I thought all the...
Most of it was on Idaho.
Right, yeah, everything was on Idaho Street, and like Hamilton, they didn't catch Hamilton drug. Pick Electric, I don't think they catched him.
I think his windows.
Probably broke the windows, I'm not kidding. But,
would you label what happened in Ferrell during the summer of 1969? Would you label the riot?
Would I label it as a riot? No. It was just, I think it was a bunch of people out trying to get attention, get some attention, let the people know that they live in Ferrell too. Right.
Okay, what can you recall about the Black Youth Action Committee? Remember who they were?
Yeah. Yep.
What do you remember about?
I think they was out to gain self-recognition. I hate to say it. They was a faster talker, more educated than me. But as I go older, I learned a lot. I was always around, you know, educated people, always in my life. And even in Virginia, Washington, D.C., I was always around people that done things for themselves. And those guys didn't do a damn thing for themselves. They wasn't looking forward. Half of them didn't have no jobs. Still ain't got no jobs. And they was fast talkers. And they was getting a bunch of dummies around town to go along with them. That's my opinion about it.
I think their motives are pretty selfish now.
Yeah, out for self-recognition.
Well, how do you think the Sharon Hill reported the events in the 60s? Were they fair or biased?
think he was pretty fair. I think.
How do you think the Feral Police dealt with all the racial problems?
I'd give him an E for effort. Because I think that's one of the main problems around the country. I believe that the police department need to be dressed up around the country, and Ferrell was one of them. And I work with the chief's brother is my, him and I work hand in hand in the middle together. But like I told him, I even told him, I think that the police department all around the country need to be dressed up, clean up their act, because it was policemen on in Ferrell that are headhunters, and whoever, I read the word said they was headhunters, and they would especially go out to look for blacks to beat on. And it's policemen in Washington, D.C., where I'm so familiar with. Matter of fact, in a couple weeks, I'll be there. But that it's people on the force, they can go beat you side of the head and all hell break loose. And I think that that's one of the main issues is still that way in this country. That one man can, as they always say, can start World War III. Right.
Well, you think the police might have added to some of the problems in Berlin?
What really started, now you kind of get to bring my memory back. What really started was a fire up on Spearman Avenue. And it was a little black kid got burnt up in there. Got burnt. Well, she died from it, whatever. And that really started the whole thing in Ferrell. I remember that now.
That was
because,
what year was that?
I don't know what year it was.
68, 69.
I think it was more like, let's say 68. But that was started the first ride, because they claimed that the fire and violence didn't respond like it should or something. I don't know. But you know, like a lot of that stuff, I really don't know. I wasn't interested in it, and I didn't want to get involved in it, because I knew. I guess I was scared to get out of there, because I do know that people was taking pop shots and they was firing at random and they didn't give a damn who they hit. And all that, and because through the media or watching on TV, like in Washington, a lot of people got killed, innocent people, innocent bystanders. And I just really didn't get involved. And what was said, I didn't pay too much attention to it. And like if I say, well, if they said they was coming to burn down 305 Fruit Avenue at the time where I was living at, I wouldn't know about it. I didn't know about it. But, every move that was made in town by the federal police and the city officials and the courts and whatever in Mercy, they know who's who and who done it and who caused it and everything. Because like I was standing out there in the mill one day, and a guy told me, he said, who the hell do he think he is? And he called the guy's name, Maurice Hopkins. He said, who the hell Maurice Hopkins think he is? He was supposed to be the so-called leader then. And I didn't even know that, and I'm black.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
How did most of your friends feel about what was going on, how the police handled the situation? Pretty much the same way you did?
I think they was about the same way as I did. Thought about the same line as I did. But,
well, you mentioned the city government. How do you think the Ferrell city government handled the problems?
Pretty good. I give them an E for effort too, because it was something that they was really, see, a lot of this stuff, this racial stuff, it was something that no one knew how to handle. Not even Martin Luther King. He's one of the greatest. In other words, he was happened to be an educated black man. He knew how to just keep on striving to make progress. But like a lot of these people around Ferrell, Sharon, they really didn't know how to They didn't believe it was happening. They didn't think that, like, I didn't believe it. And I'm 53 years old. I didn't believe it to see the things that I have seen in my days in which it really happened. Like, I work with people, they've seen lynching, they've seen people beat on and lynching and everything else. But I've never seen nothing like it. I hear a little bit about it, I read a little bit about it, but I never see those things. It's like, I work with black people down through the years that say they had went out and just worked for bread and butter. No money involved. I never in my days worked for nothing. I always was paid. And I worked all my days just about for white people. And when I worked and I hear them say that they worked from sun up to sundown, I never done that. I had hours. I go to work at 8 o'clock in the morning, I'm off at 4 or 4:30. But it's just people didn't know how to handle it. And then a lot of people that further on down south, like for my home, really my home, it's not a bad place. Because everybody there, it's not farmers. Then further on down, most of those people, all they know is farming, working the mill, like, cutting wood for flooring and stuff like that. Lumber mills. I've done that. But I know people that hate the ground that you walk on. You hate the ground that you walk on. And I can't understand it. Sometime I might ask, I say, why? They say, I seen this and I seen that. And then some of them, they just tell them damn lie. They just want something, somebody to pick on.
It's pretty easy to stereotype.
Right. And then if he's a fast talker, he can stir up a bunch of people. He can stir up a bunch of people.
Well, you pretty much think that most people can get what they want if they go about it the right way.
I really do. I believe that anybody can get anything he want in this country if he go about it in the right way. I really do believe. Because I go back to my uncle. My uncle died in May of 79. He was a millionaire. He was a millionaire. And I got people right back in the room to show it to you right now.
Okay, is there any group of people or movement which tried to better things in Farrell during the 60s?
Yeah, it was a few ministers. But they really didn't know how to go about it. We had a guy, he got a doctor's degree. I don't know, I guess they call him Dr. Levine, Reverend Levine. He didn't know how to handle it. Because he was wheeling, dealing all these years. He would go down to Sharon Steele and he'd say, well, Mr. Roma, I need this church up here. He got it. That was for him and his congregation. He might go down in Sharon Steele and he'd say, Mr. Roma, I got about a half a dozen blacks up at Neat's job. He probably got them. Reverend Singletary, same way. They could go down and shake Roma's hand or go to West House, shake this certain person's hand or go up to Mercy, shake Stranahan's hand or whoever. They got it. They'll hire, get whatever they want. There were certain ministers around this town, they would go downtown Sharon and certain supermarkets. Well, we're going to have a chicken dinner, fish dinner. We're going to try to sell some chicken and sell some fish. We're going to make some money to buy seats or something in the church. But, which is okay. But they really wasn't, it was more or less in church. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not a hypocrite.
Yeah.
I believe in God and all that stuff. Where they was putting a lot of emphasis in church and not on themselves and their congregation, how they live, how they was educating their kids and all this stuff. You know what I mean? That's my belief about it. I mean, it's just like my uncle. He been tied up in the church. Sunday they gonna honor him. Sunday for Old Father's Day, that he been such a great church worker. Which he was a great church worker, but he wasn't looking at things that was happening around him. He worked hard all his days, Down insurance deal, he put in over 40 years down there. But his time was broken during the depression days. He wired up, retired with 33 years. But all those years that he was working in church, he wasn't really looking at what was happening around him. In other words, he was taking care of church. He was taking care of home to a certain extent. And the people that he was willing to deal with, they was all around him. I guess he want that little self-recognition that I'm Deacon Johnson. And I got these people where I want them. I got them coming to church and giving them nickels and dimes on Sundays. And, you know, everybody's happy. I leave here and I go down to Virginia or every May or every August. I get down and I pray real hard. And I get up and tell the people what I'm doing. I work in the mill. Well, the people, they looked up to him, you know, because they never worked in the mill. They never know how the mill progress and all that stuff. But in return, I don't know, when something like a racial, getting back to this racial thing, when that stuff like that pops up, they don't know how to handle it. No black person knew how to handle it, but Martin Luther King, and at the time was, he was the head of the Urban League, Whitney Young, the head of them. Well, him, they was educated people. They knew a little bit about what was going on. They knew about what was going on around the country, and they knew how to handle people. But it, my opinion is so many people here in the world, they don't know how to handle stuff. And sure. And most of them, they're fast talkers, and they go out and they, for self-recognition.
So it was pretty much a learning experience for everybody.
It was a learning experience for me. And it was a good experience, you know, because I could, I was around a lot of them, and they were so-called leaders, and they got what they wanted to hell with you.
So,
but right, and they could stir stir up hell in this town. Right now, they can do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, can you recall any specific examples of racial prejudice in Farrell during the 60s, say in real estate or on a job or socially?
I never was involved in it because I always went so far, and I hate to say that, I come up in the late 30s and the early 40s and the 50s. Always had that old theory that I went to a black school, all black school, that blacks had their place, you know, in life. In other words, if I, simply I want to buy a house up on, let's see, way up on Rumble Boulevard where the school is, which there was no blacks up there. Dr. Lowe was the first one to come through. All right. If I had the money in my pocket, before I would have went up there, and if you was one of the neighbors, before I would attempt to buy that house, I would go around to all of them. I said, would you mind if I move in? When they tell me they don't want to be bothered, I wasn't going to force myself on it. It's just like when people were like going in these restaurants, they were breaking the restaurant, you know, breaking down these restaurants, like in the South. Ain't no way in the world that I would force myself on those people. Because I solely believe that people can poison.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't force myself on anyone.
Yeah, I'm gonna flip this tape over. Okay. Okay. Well, do you think any single group was responsible for the racial unrest and violence that happened to
them? Any single group? No. No. It was just a bunch of people just got together just like that overnight. They said, well, we're going to do this, we're going to form this, and they didn't know what the hell they were doing. They didn't know how to do it, how to go about it. They just formed themselves overnight. And then they heard about this one in Chicago, they heard about this one in, who was it, Bobby Seale, or Huey Newton, or some of the Black Panthers. They was stirring up a lot of trouble in California at the time, and it was pretty strong. And they was on just make people. I don't believe that you can make anyone do anything. I really do. And I hear that, I strongly believe it. I hear this all down through life, that you can lead a horse to the water, but you can't make it drink. And but they was all just make people do this, and they'll make people do that. And they was using a lot of dummies. I hate to say it.
Followers.
You can get you a fast talker and talk real fast and loud and clear. He can lead you a long ways. But I really don't believe that that it was anyone that could really lead it like it should be. You know, like go down and sit down and like to try to do today. Sit down and talk with these people. Can't we do this? Can't you hire this kid? Or can't you educate this kid or something like that?
Looking back at the 1960s and the situation in Farrell, what changes would you like to have seen instituted in Farrell overall, maybe to perhaps better things than what they were?
Now?
Well, back in the 60s, you began to could have been done to better things.
Well, better education. I put a lot of emphasis on that because I didn't get it. But better relations with the, you know, be more interested in what's happening around here. You know, not say, well, I can go downtown and buy me a new suit, put on me a new pair of shoes and all that, and go downtown and look clean and stay on the damn corner down there on the weekend. Figure that I'm the greatest thing that ever sat on a commode, you know. But that's the way some of the people think they are, you know. Self-recognition, brag about this, brag about that. Well, I got this and I got that. I know people that get them a new car, get them a new car every year or every other year and pay them long payments and don't have a pipe to piss in the window to throw it at them. And that's literally wrong. And I know people in town that they ride around in Cadillacs, dress nice, talk loud, got little kids at home, they don't give a damn about them. Some of them can't read or write. Put it right the name upside the wall. They say, well, I'm going to hang so-and-so since this person tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. They don't know what the hell they'll read. But yet, in return, they are telling their kids the wrong thing. Their priorities are a little mixed up. They're telling their kids, well, hate this one. Don't trust this one. Well, you got to trust someone. Take a chance with him anyway, but don't go too far with him. You got to trust someone. Feel him out. I fell out of many of them. I fell him out. If you use my boss in the mill, I work with you, I do the things you tell me, but I'm gonna be a little leery about you. But it's people that's right here in this town, they're telling people don't trust a white man no further than you can see. Some of them are even preaching hate.
What do you think the racial problems that Farrell had were inevitable? They would have happened anyway.
Probably so. It would happen eventually. The way, because you know, it's always good. Like I say, it was certain people that was running around looking for self-recognition. They found it.
How different are race relations in Farrell now compared to what they were in the 60s?
I would say 50%, 50-60% better.
There's still a lot of room for improvement.
Yes. Both sides.
How do you feel the problems that Farrell had, racial problems Farrell had during the 60s, has affected the reputation of the city in the greater Chenango Valley? You're working in Sharpsville. I hear a lot of stuff about Farrell.
Well, I tell you, Farrell got a bad name. got a bad man now. And it is not all blacks either. Ferrell is, see, down through the years, Ferrell was known, like I know of some people around here lived on Spearman Avenue. And this is, because one of my daughters went to school with their kids. And this guy told me in the middle of the day, he said, Dave, you know where that house is on the corner of Spearman and Federal Street? He named the people that lived there. He said, man, it was a mob killing years ago. I was aware like they killed about 4 or 5 people or something. It was more or less gangland slam. And certain people, old time especially, they knew, they remember those things that happened in Ferrell. And that was people fighting for power, I guess. I wasn't too familiar with it, but that old saying, it still hangs with Ferrell. I remember one time a guy with Petrillo come near Ferrell. If you notice, I've been trying that cold name.
Anyway,
when he come near Ferrell, and this another guy, which was the same nationality, he said, well, you got a dig old Mayor Ferrell, just like that. And he was Italian, too. That made a remark, but yet he lives up in Hickory. You know, I'm so-and-so, I live up in Hickory. Yeah, and I didn't particularly like that because I happen to live in Ferrell, you know what I mean? And but it's a lot of, Ferrell got a bad name, there's no question about it. He got a bad name, but I'm not going in that way. I'm gonna stay right here as long as I possibly can, but I'm not going anywhere. But they got, and then with that racial stuff, when that came along, that didn't help the cause. Yeah. But even before that racial stuff come up, Ferrell was known as a little, I don't know, just a hoodlum's town. You could find, they say, anything you want in Ferrell, you could find it.
Well, is there anything else that important you'd like to discuss that we didn't cover?
No. I know a lot of things, but I know, like I told you from the get-go, I like to keep my mouth shut on it. I see and don't see. Try to get along with everybody. Walk away. I've walked away from trouble, but keep pushing now.
Right.
But it's pretty rough.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.